Greetings. You're listening to Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take a deep dive into a horror film and talk about how it connects to queerness, religion, and theology. I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the praying mantis that interrupts everything.
Very good. Love it. My name is Pace, and I am the little trail of flags that follow the cloud wherever it goes.
And I guess I'm the guest host, Robert. I have nothing really as colorful to say. Those were just really hard to follow.
Welcome, Robert. It is good to have you on the podcast. I have been excited about this, Pace and I both, for months, because we had to reschedule from my own family emergency stuff. So I'm super excited. For our listeners, Robert is a painter, heretic, and PhD candidate at University of Buffalo, where his focus is on African American studies such as Afrofuturism, folklore, ATR, ADR, and issues surrounding food apartheid. Welcome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just for listeners who don't know, ATR is, remind me what ATR stands for.
So ATR is African traditional religion, and that's religion that is directly from Africa without any dilutions of colonialism or white supremacy. Whereas ADRs are African diasporic religions, which are religions that are heavily based in African religions, but due to colonialism and enslavement and just pure survivance, the religions have become like this beautiful hodgepodge of indigenous religions, African and Anglo-European religions. So
nice, thank you. That is, I had figured out ADR, but I was like, So that's helpful not only for our listeners but also for me, and I appreciate
and me.
That.
Yes,
yeah.
So this is kind of like, before we dive into all things, just to check in on how you are, if there's anything you've been reading or watching lately that has like stuck out to you, or so yeah, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Trump is going to jail. Yeah.
I know, it's amazing.
Let's see. No, everything has been wonderful here. I mean, with me just working on qualifying exams, as well as working on issues of food disparities in Buffalo, New York, where I'm living at. And so, yeah, because we have a lot of issues, especially after we had them before June 14th of last year, the tragic shooting. There were issues before then, but now they've been more. They've been exasperated. You know, they've been more in your face, and just like an open wound is just like, okay, things need to be fixed. So, that's what I've been working on.
Hopefully, that leads. The like inability for people, particularly white people, to like deny stuff, hopefully will lead to more action.
It's working that way. It's just trying to get that you know, Steve Jerby, Pastor Steve Jerby. So and this leads to that. Jerby had written out a little essay and had talked about it, and basically said, whenever you are a person going into a marginalized community and you want to help, you should always ask what you need to do, ask what needs to be done. Then what you do is you put your body on the line, you sit down, and you shut the fuck up. And so that led to, with looking at what's happening in Buffalo, especially on the east side where it happened, is there are some people who are following that model, and there are some people, like one man who came in on the anniversary with a big old cross and put it right in front of Tops, and while other people in the community, without the communities asking the community to do it, and just like, I'm here. And it's just like, yeah, that's not what the community needs.
A little bit terrifying. Like, yeah. That brings up a whole bunch of...
So that's one of them. It's just getting people to listen and putting their bodies on the line and just coming in, coming in when invited and just being quiet, you know, and helping. So hopefully people will learn that.
Yeah, I hope.
Yeah. So that, everything is golden. It's
wonderful. Good luck through your qualifying exams. I did mine a few years ago, but now I'm just in those late stages of dissertation writing where it just... Yeah. Maybe I'll finish, maybe I'll just not, and just never graduate in that period of, like, who knows? So
yeah, I'm not even at that stage yet, and I understand. It's academically, for advisors, I don't know if it was the same with you, with it as me, it's like herding cats with my advisors and my reading committee. It's just like, I need you to sign this. Huh? I need you to sign this. What?
Exactly.
Yep. So, but yeah. So it's going to be interesting because I have a really good, even though they're like herding cats, I have a good crew of people who are behind me. So they're pretty good. Yeah, they're cool. I like
them. What about you, Pace? Anything to report? Anything going on?
No, I've been jumping on the bandwagon and watching all the religious trauma documentaries have come out in the past few months about, like, the Hillsong one. I just finished that one. I watched the one about the Duggars, and I just started one about a different cult that was related to, like, a college or something. I don't remember the name of that one, but I'll try to put it in the show notes when I'm editing, if I can remember, so people can look it up. But, like, I don't know. I've just been kind of on... I finally was worn down. It's like, I'll just watch these, even though I know what they're all about going into it. I know what's going to happen, but since it's enough of the conversation, sometimes, you know, as a public theologian, you kind of have to be in on the cultural conversation. So yeah, church is horrifying often, frequently. So that's what I've been up to. What about you, Emily?
Kay and I actually just recorded the episode that is out now, but by the time this comes out, will have been released the week before. Yeah, so our episode for the third Sunday after Pentecost, we did a deep dive into the word evangelical. And so teasing out, like, the original Greek, how, like, that came about, and then a lot of evangelicalism as a movement and what that looks like, and born again and prosperity and decision theologies, and then, like, what are the possibilities for evangelicals. So we, like, figured out, we didn't watch all of the documentaries, but we had watched a smattering of them and have a couple left, and but, like, listed all of the documentaries in our episode description and all of that for people who are trying to see it. But especially with, like, both with Trump being actually, like, going to jail, and with the verdict expected for the Hillsong stuff, for the, like, first round of Hillsong stuff expected this month, it was just, like, It's going to be an interesting time for people who have put all their eggs in really dangerous baskets. I'm doing that, winding down my time at the congregations I'm serving and getting ready for sabbatical and Pride. Mm. We're I'm getting my hair cut and colored on Friday, and it's going to be fabulous. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited. But,
I'm stoked. I'm so waiting for that. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Since it's Pride Month, I'm doing a beer dabbler end of the month. I'm excited about. That's probably my big public Pride celebration participation this year, just because all the reasons why we talk about rainbow capitalism and all those things, and also we're still living in a pandemic. I just am a little bit, and police presence at Pride events, I typically am not as much of a Pride participant as I have in years past. But
although Pace and I are both participating in a special Pride edition of Roll for Sermon. Ooh. I'm ridiculous and on TikTok and obsessed with Roll for on TikTok, which is like a D&D plus whatever, originally Roll for Sandwich with Adventures in Ardia, but I started Roll for Sermon. And so Pace and I we have two episodes coming out for Pride Month. One is mine and one is Pace's. So by the time this comes out, hopefully they'll both be up. But they're not up yet. But I'm excited to have like super queer, super pride Roll for Sermons. It'll be fun. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we can link to them in the show notes too.
Yeah.
But
I'm stoked.
I wanna hear that. Yeah. We already had our Pride, the parade in Buffalo. I don't know why I have it so early. Yeah. But yeah, we were in it. Our food dispensary, grocery store truck was in it. Nice. It is enjoyable, but the one thing I miss about Chicago somewhat with their Pride is they have barriers. So we have no police presence at ours, except for at the end. And there are no barriers. So the only issue for me seeing these wonderful, beautiful people is that they often crowd into the streets, and it's hard to drive a truck through this crowd of people. So, yeah. You know, I want them to enjoy, but yeah, I'm like, please watch your children, you know? And so there's that. And then later on this month, we are, the family, we're going to Pride in Toronto.
Nice.
And, yeah, because we're like 2 hours from Toronto, so we're going to Pride in Toronto.
That's awesome.
And you know, we went last year, and it was wonderful last year. My son and I, Arif and I, climbed the scaffolding because there were so many people, so we had to climb a scaffolding to watch the show. And I almost was not here to do this show because I almost slipped. But anyway, but this year we're going to go. We're going to, you know, go this year and enjoy it this year as well. So it's fun.
Nice. I never actually went to Pride in Chicago. That's like the one that because I was like on CPE, I was in New York, so I went to New York Pride, or I was working, so I think 1 year I was like in Mexico.
Okay.
But yeah, we had Trans Pride here in Baltimore the first weekend of June, and that was fun. It's really small because it's only been around, I think, 2 years, but slowly growing. And then our Baltimore Pride is the end of the month, and I have a wedding on the day of the parade. But then the festival, like more festival style booths and stuff, is that Sunday. So I'll have my last worship service with my congregations and then go to Pride. And I think it'll actually be like a really good space for me, but yeah.
Nice. Yeah, well, I guess time for Emily to transition. I'm so excited for this. Let's see how it goes.
I was like, you started and I was like,
do you do music or something? Like,
no, we're terrible at transitions.
We can do music, and it depending on how bad it is, sometimes I'll throw music in there to make it a little bit smoother. But
you just go ba 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 ba. We're transitioning now. There you go.
Careful, because now that might become our transition music. There was one time where I did something like that to go into the deep dive, and so now that's like a go-to where Pace can always just pop it in. So. You might become part of our transition.
Hey, that's fine. That is fine.
But our next part, so we asked this of all our guests on the podcast, if you have one, but if you have a real life church horror story, so it could be something supernatural, or it could be a story about church people being shitty or really bad theology or kind of any of those things. So if you have one that you're comfortable sharing, we would love to.
Sure. I have, I mean, do you want me to go first?
Yeah, we ask our guests.
So I have two. I was born and raised Catholic, Roman Catholic, which is a horror story in and of itself. but the church where, so this is old school, so it's like we had the church and you had the convent for the nuns, and right next to my school. And so and this is a supernatural thing. And so we went to the convent, a couple of classmates and I, and at the top of the stairs is a rickety old stairs leading to a room that you can't go in. So if you see any horror movies, and any horror movies set in a nunnery, so if you see any horror movies in a nunnery, and they have those stairs that lead to that room, and it's all peeled paint and nastiness and stuff, that actually what it looked like. Oof. Not bullshitting, that's actually what it looked like. And so
creepy.
It is creepy. And so we were always told you can't walk up those stairs. And so one day, being the little shithead that I am, I decided I'm gonna walk up these stairs. And I walked up the stairs and they're creaking and creaking, and all of a sudden I hear from the room, "Don't come in."
Ooh.
And so it's like, okay, I'm gonna turn my little self, not this little black duck. I'm gonna turn around and walk back to where I was, because like I said, because our school was literally, it's like if you open the door, there's one door. If you open the door, it links the school to the nunnery. So it's like literally, so we would go and help the nuns and you know, clean up and stuff like that. But yeah, this is the one time they said. And in the church, which is St. Francis de Paulo, which is no longer there, we had stairs that led down to the basement. Once again, creepy basement, episode for Supernatural. Creepy basement, episode of Supernatural, you know, this whole thing. And I'm like, okay, I'm an altar boy. God is with me. God loves me. What the hell? I'll go down these stairs. I get ready to go down the stairs, and it's like metal, it's not metal, but stone stairs, and all of a sudden it's just like Father Meyer, who was the priest then, wonderful man, a little bit on the conservative side, but wonderful man, says, "Don't go down those stairs." I'm like, why not? He's like, "Just don't go down there." Okay. Nothing ever happened for that, but it was at that point. We're just like, you know what? This place is a little creepy. I think I need to go back to the hood where I have to deal with just, you know, gangbangers and stuff. Because this is a little, you know, a little crazy. But, yeah. So that's the supernatural part of the story. And just the people being shitty in the church, you know, being black in a... Or watching someone, because I really don't give a fuck. I'm like Lutheran by osmosis. But watching other people go through the shit that people who I am married to or related to, because they're black and they're authentic, mm-hmm. and just watching people not being able to fathom and understand, comprehend that aspect of a personality, is really just fucked up. Wanting that person, you know, wanting that person to, we want diversity, but not really diversity. We want a black pastor, but we don't want what the black pastor brings. We want them to conform to our
way of doing things. We want diversity in image, but not theology, in practice. Action, yeah. practice, right. any of that.
We want diversity, mm-hmm. but yet, you know, we'll have an American flag right next on the altar.
Oof.
Yeah.
You know, right. we'll sing "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God," but we won't sing anything else. You know, being told that because you talk about being in loving relationships, being in an open relationship, loving other people as you just love yourself, and mm-hmm. being open to everyone, except for Trumpers, being open to everyone, having people saying you're going to go to hell because you're leading the people to hell, you know, is not devastating. It's expected, it's expected to hear those things, especially when you talk about being authentic and being yourself. So, and not being afraid to move, and not I won't say afraid, not moving, not staying in a particular space. When you move out of that space that you've been put into, or that society wants you to be into, when you move out of that space, you're gonna get it. For that congregation that's like 90-something% white, I'm just saying, but as a congregation, as a religion, y'all need to work on that.
Oh, for sure. We just had synod assembly, and our synod has a fair amount of work to do. It's Delaware, Maryland, and so there's a lot of diversity in who is in the different places, and in terms of race, in terms of gender, particularly like gender dynamics in general, but then also like with add in like transphobia and stuff. And we like did a good thing and passed a thing to increase it, to like expect education around trans competency, but and the process was not bad to get there, but there was definitely some like hitting up against each other in ways that like I think not knowing the synod as well, this was my first synod assembly, there are other people who knew each other better and so could then have the like follow-up conversations with each other, but like we as a church for so long have just refused to have those conversations, especially in those of us in the ELCA, but like mm-hmm. writ large. And so then we just, when we do finally get to that point where we have to talk about it, it's like, we wanted diversity, but like, did we?
Yeah. Like the old saying goes, but you can use it for being queer as well, and being gender non-binary. It's the same thing, the conversation is black. If you want to be black, everybody wants to be black until it's time to be black. You know, we want to, people want to be queer and be like, we're for queer people until it's time to actually step up. And then it's like, mm-hmm. no, we're going to be like Target.
We want your dollars.
Yeah, we want your dollars, but we don't want to.
But we don't really want them that badly.
Yeah, we don't want them that badly. Yeah. It's like, oh no, we're scared by the NASCAR group. No offense to NASCAR. Just saying, if any NASCAR fans out there.
I mean, NASCAR is better than Target. Like, NASCAR
that's true.
With shit, but like.
So I withdraw my NASCAR term to NASCAR people. You're actually pretty cool.
It's a whole thing. But also I love the way I accidentally muted myself when you were talking about the stairs up to the room that you can't go in. And I was like, hey, this is exactly like Nightmare on Elm Street. The room where Freddy Krueger was presumably conceived. And I was like,
maybe it was him. Maybe it was, but yeah, it's Sister Teresa Ann and a couple of other nuns. I love them to death because they, you know, when my mom was sick, they would watch over me. But still, I think the school and the church and the convent are still there. I think it's still there. Yeah, even though I think it's shut down, but I think it's still there. It's a CPS school, a Chicago public school.
Speaking of things that are now shut down, shoot, I forgot what it was called. I don't remember the thing that got created in Agua Dulce. that the one guy was like, dang, it was going to be a good transition. I promise it was. But it's not, so we're just going to go for it. The it's film that we're...
Oh, Jupiter's Claim, his part.
Yeah. Like, speaking of things that were shut down, Jupiter's Claim.
There you go. There you go.
So our film... our film that we are covering for today is Nope, directed by Jordan Peele. And it came out last year in 2022. And our solid contextualizing that Pace has started to do so that I understand what other movies are happening at the time. Although this one I already knew, but both Everything Everywhere All at Once and Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness came out that year as well. And we covered both of those on the last season in our last season, Nightmare on Elm Street season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. This was originally going to be part of that season, so we were going to, like, for the first time ever in the podcast, we were really heavy in last season, weirdly, into, like, 80s movies. We're always into 80s movies, but, like, also 2020 movies. Who knew? Yeah. So, like, I was kind of impressed with us. Yeah, although we're doing a lot of 2020 movies this season, too. We did Candyman with People Under the Scares podcast, the new one from 2021, Nia DaCosta's. Keeping that trend going.
So what was your first memory or experience of watching this film? It's harder to do this one when it's these ones because it makes more sense that literally I watched this film for the podcast. People still have to take a drink, but if they're playing our drinking game, but yeah, the first time I watched it was in January for this podcast, and then I watched it again earlier this month for this, for actually recording. What about you, Reb? Where did you see it in theaters, or?
I saw it first in the theater, because it's always Jordan Peele, always got to go see him in a theater, for me at least. I can't. What really caught me first was when the scene with Otis Sr. dying. Because it was kind of like, okay, it's a horror movie. I expect something, but the scene that caught me the most was the thing that got me is just two things. One, the reality that that Peele infuses into the scene where they're driving to the hospital. Is just that sense of reality, the intimacy. It could have been like just a really campy scene, but it was an intimate, real scene. And I think that's one of the things that Peele does, is he draws that out in his movies. His characters are not just there for the shock value or just for somebody, for the villain to kill. He gets very human about his interactions with people. And so that scene really got to me. And the scene where they explained that the first stuntman was black for the horse and jacket. Yeah. So I'm just like, I need to turn my black car because I didn't even know that shit.
I didn't know that either. I was like, oh my God, man, it's so cool.
But you don't have a black car, so.
Well, yeah, but like, it's just a cool fact.
Is a cool fact. Yeah, it is a cool fact. And I'm just like, oh, I did not know that. So yeah, so those are the two scenes that really struck me first with the movie. Yeah, not even the Gordy scene. I'm just like, yeah. At first, I didn't know what to make of it. So that was one of those scenes where I didn't know what to make of it at first. I'm like, so when it became clear, I'm like, okay. But the first were the truck scene and the stuntman.
What about you, Pace?
I first saw this when it became available for streaming. I purchased it because, similar to you, Robert, whenever there's a Jordan Peele film, I know I need to get it. It came out right before I had surgery last summer, so I wasn't able to see it in theaters. But when it was available on streaming, I bought it, I watched it, I loved it, and I was like, we are going to cover this one season on Horror Nerds at Church, and here we are. So that was it for me.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this, I think, in our Candyman episode. Anything that Jordan Peele is involved in, I'm like, yep, mm-hmm. I have to watch it. Like, I have not been in a theater since the pandemic started, so it wouldn't necessarily be in theaters, but, like, I'm going to watch it because he just, yeah. He does, yeah.
Well, did you see Wendell and Barry then? The show that he produced for Netflix, that's like a stop computer animated designed to look like stop motion mm-hmm. show on Netflix. I have not seen it either, but I really want to.
It's good, and it's an answer to the Tim Burton Nightmare on Elm Street. Oh yeah. Thing and so he's kind of like, yeah, I can do this too, and yeah. So and do it well, so it was done.
Oh, nice. I don't know if I've seen it on Netflix. I haven't been on Netflix in a while, but I will have to check it out. YouTube about it.
Yep. Yep, going right to background. So I have a few notes here. A quote when on the interview circuit, when Jordan Peele was doing the interview circuit about this film, promoting it, he said that humanity is the monster in my films. And I think that's true for all three of his major motion pictures he directed. This one included, he intentionally wanted it to be kind of a combination of a Western and a UFO film. The creature design for the alien was inspired by Neon Genesis Evangelion's Angels, which is something we've talked about on the podcast so much with past guest co-host Abel Arroyo. It's a show that we want to do a BooTube on, so we'll see if we ever do. But I'm obsessed with that show. So kind of half inspired by Neon Genesis Evangelion Angels, and then also by sea creatures like jellyfish. As far as the plot of the film, he said that he was inspired by King Kong and Jurassic Park, and the theme of both of those he interprets as humanity being addicted to spectacle, and thought that was something he wanted to explore in this film. You both mentioned Edward Muybridge's animal look motion plate, 626 Gallop, which is the scene that they're talking about the horse jockey in, which is a real thing. So that's the name of that particular thing, and is one of the, he made many plates, not just that one, that had various images, mostly of animals and locomotion. Then the last behind the scenes thing I have is that the Chainsaw Awards, which were last month in May, this film won for Best Director, Jordan Peele. And he had a very funny acceptance speech. I encourage y'all listeners to go and listen on YouTube, and basically like making fun of horror fans for loving The Disturbing, even though he himself is a horror fan. And so it's kind of like making fun of himself as well. But even though they didn't win, Kiki Palmer was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and Danielle Kaluuya was nominated for Best Actor. I wish they had both won, because their performances are amazing, especially Kiki Palmer in this. I love her. She is so amazing in this. So.
I really liked both of it. I mean, I really thought the acting in this was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was, everyone was great. It's like, and it's just the little nuances of blackness that are in the movie, like even the simple thing of the word nope.
Yeah.
That's just such a that's such a us thing, where he's just like going, yeah, nope.
Yep.
The first time that we really hear him say it, I was like, Dad, yeah. So that's
they were and this just there, you can tell that it's a good ensemble, because it's like they're Kiki and I forgot his name, the actor plays OJ, I should know that because he's also in Black
Daniel
actor. Daniel. Their connection is just, you know, And I also think too the getting, you know, going back to the Otis scene where Otis Senior dies, I will say that scene also struck me too, because, well, like I said, not just with the car, but you have the actor who is playing Otis, Otis Senior.
Oh yeah.
And
Keith David.
And Keith David is known. If you had a Mount Rushmore of black male actors, he'll be like Keith David, James Earl Jones, Denzel, you know, and so it's like he is so to have him in the film and have him die off in that first couple of minutes, you're like, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
He ain't supposed to.
What are you doing to
Why, yeah, why is the documentary voice guy dying so soon? You know.
And one of the things that's phenomenal about him too is, like, even though, agree 100%, he is like super well known, it's been in so much, but like he got his start in horror, being in John Carpenter's The Thing, and being in They Live, also by John Carpenter, and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool seeing him return to his horror roots in a sense with this.
And I love They Live, but it's just funny to see him, how great of an actor he is, just sitting in a horse, and you're just like, you're automatically just drawn to him. It's like, he's just sitting, why am I drawn? He's not doing nothing. He's not punching nobody, black flipping. He's not raising his eyebrow like certain actors who actually not named. you know, he's just sitting in on a horse, and I'm drawn to him, you know. And so, you know, there is that.
Yeah. And that, I think that opening, that part of the opening with him just sitting there, you're like, because it's like the whole like the background stuff and all of that, and it's just like, what is going to happen? Something is about to happen.
Yeah.
And never in a million years would I have guessed raining metal from the sky.
And it's funny how, if you think about it, because they say you had the scene with Jupe in that whole beginning scene, but then you go to this, you know, you have the scene, this one scene where they're trying to make basically this other entity, this I don't want to say animal, because you know, conform to a scene, and it just wasn't going to do it. The chaotic nature of that scene compared to this man sitting on a horse.
Mm-hmm.
He's just sitting there, you know, he and the horse are just one with each other and just sitting there calmly, you know, in nature. And which is kind of indicative of the whole movie. It's like they're in this space where, while they are conco-capitalist, they're in this space where they treat the animals that they work with humanely and as part of the family, as opposed to trying to force them to do something for their own, you know, gain. Even the way they train is different, you know. And so, compared to Jupu, it's just like, you know.
Yeah.
Just put them there and
love them. Yeah, love them, but
Like when Lucky is on the set and then gets spooked. It's like, okay. Listen to the expert who says, no, not yet. Also, like, there's just so much where I was like, this is not going to go. It is so obvious that it's not going to go well, because there is such a, like, rush and pressure and all of that stuff.
Right.
And then, no.
Yeah, and and for that, there's also, I'm sorry, Pace, were you going to say something?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay. I mean, also for that scene, you can see how a microcosm of society and how it treats black folks, because you have three opposing archetypes in a certain sense, especially in the entertainment industry. You have the older Keith David character who, you know, has this, you know, way about him that people, you know, like, oh, he's that Denzel Morgan Freeman. Yeah, he's like, he's like Denzel Washington. He's like, we're going to pay attention because he's that old magical Negro. And then you have Emerald, who's like almost like the hip hoppy type of dancing. Not, you know, the hey everybody, look at, you know, the hip hop. Cool. We're kind of cool. We're queer cool. And people going, okay, we'll listen to you too because you're non threatening, because you're the queer cool person. You know, and we're not going to listen, we listen to you, older senior, because you're like the old statesman person. But then you have OJ, who's like the not one who any of those.
Yeah,
yeah. He's like that archetype. Not that archetype, but he's like that black male or black person who is like not necessarily conforming to either thing. And so you don't know what to do with him, so therefore you dismiss him, yeah. Even though he's an expert.
So telling too in that first scene when with Lucky on the set when like not when he, OJ the whole time was like looking down, not making eye contact, just being very like fulfilling that role of like being submissive for the white stage ensemble production and all that, and really needed Kiki to help like break through and communicate for him in that like hip-hoppy kind of way, which is exactly like you're saying, like what Hollywood does. And I just think Jordan Peele did that so well of showing that dynamic between those archetypes.
And you're making a great point, Pace, because it's like he is looking down because he's kind of like, you're the predator, you're the animal, and if like... I look directly in the eye, you know, you may want to start some stuff. And so, you know, and I think I don't know if we're gonna get to the end of the movie, but he kind of has that relation with power, especially white power, and he's like, you're kind of looking down like you're a predator. But at the end of the movie, if you notice, he looked the predator in the eye.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I need to do this for family. So he kind of gets over that fear, you know, that being in that other space, you know. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
There are. I love my John Chappell too, but sometimes he adds characters who I'm just like, why is he? Why are they there? The guy on the bike, you know.
Oh yeah, the motorcyclist. Yeah.
The motorcyclist, and just like, I feel like the motorcycles is just an going back to the whole thing of Hollywood intervening.
Yeah.
Without knowing what's going on, because he has the whole...
Yeah, he's, you know, doing the TMZ. TMZ.
He has the whole metal helmet on with the, you know, you can... It can, you know, I forgot, what did he call it? What did OJ call the character, the animal, the predator?
Jean Jacket, was that?
Yeah.
Jean Jacket, thank you. Yeah, Jean Jacket. He called it Jean Jacket. And so he, like, it's flashes back to the scene where they're flashing the little mirror thing in Lucky's face, and Lucky goes nuts. Same thing with the guy in Jean Jacket. Once again, Hollywood not listening.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Society not listening and thinking it can control something. And
there's another thing that scene made me think of, which is, and I would not be surprised if this was intentional for Jordan Peele, because he's so clever with this. But in The Shining, Dick Halloran, the magical Negro of that film, like drives his snow machine to the Overlook to ostensibly rescue the family, but ends up getting killed immediately. But that just served the function of getting transportation to the hotel. Just kind of like, now this presumably white person with this motorcycle helmet gets killed immediately after arriving, but brings transportation. So Kiki can use that transportation to leave and get to Jupiter's whatever, the Jupiter Park.
The claim.
Yeah, so I wonder if that's intentional. I don't know, but it just is a very interesting mirror how it like is very much subserving a plot without any other reason to be there, essentially.
I can actually see that, and I can also see him going, sure, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah,
could be. Could be. Yep.
I do think the two things that kind of traced for me, and especially as we're talking now, like the spectacle piece, because I think the motorcyclist is part of that, right? Like, it's not just like Hollywood intervenes and doesn't know. It's also like the reason that Hollywood cares is because there's a spectacle. The reason Hollywood wants the horse is for some spectacle within the movie. And the reason that the like TV show had the chimp in like that particular scene that with the was balloons for the birthday for a spectacle that triggered the chimp into fight mode, and like each of those places, Jupiter's Claim is all about spectacle. And yeah. Every time in the movie you get spectacle, something bad happens. Because every time, like you were saying, I think, Grab, earlier, the spectacle is also an attempt to control what is not controllable, an attempt to have power over that which is not, like, control. Like, you can't actually control a horse without basically breaking it from being a horse. And so, like, those different places where I was like, yeah, it's all about spectacle, but spectacle is not controllable. And so then what happens then? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. You get sucked up into a giant cloud monster where everyone can hear you scream throughout the whole
movie. Yeah. Wrap yourself. This is when Suspiria would have been helpful, that like little patch of barbed wire where they just had barbed wire like laying everywhere in Suspiria.
Yeah.
And then it's like, yeah. You just wrap yourself in barbed wire and you'll be fine. They'll spit you right back out.
Yep. Either that, or just, you know, put yourself on a metal horse and he'll, you know. But yeah, I mean, it speaks on a lot. I mean, even with Adler, his whole thing, he wants the spectacle. That's what pulls him in. Is that, you know, he wasn't interested at first. Then he's like, I'm gonna give you the movie I'm gonna give you that Oprah shot, and he's like, oh, okay, all right, cool.
And there's a distinction in how he does the spectacle, right? Like, he does it knowing, at least more, the risk, and he knows, like, if I want the shot, which is like what he is so known for, I have to take a risk, and he knows it's not. And ultimately, he's like, you know what? I'd rather have the shot than have my life. And that's a whole like dynamic. But I was like, this is the one person who does spectacle, at least in an informed way.
I also, another theme that's kind of like part and parcel of the Western genre in and of itself is isolation. Like, there's always in Westerns, there's always like an isolated town, and the sheriff comes in, has to be the lone man against the bandits and stuff. And so this movie like starts off so isolating, and there's so much just wide open space between OJ's house and between that and then the Jupiter's Claim and all that stuff. And yet kind of the balm for that, or like the antidote for that, is the community that OJ and Kiki form around them throughout the film, as they end up, especially once they get into the jean jacket plan and try to get the shot, and it's them working together again, as opposed to the one lone gunman maverick kind of thing in most Westerns that makes them ultimately be successful. So I just really love that as well.
Yes, but yeah, I love that too. I mean, that's a great point. I love that too, especially how, because they are isolated. In the beginning of the film, they're very much isolated. You know, even Angel is isolated because he's like, you know, he's at a dead end job, and it's like, oh, okay, I get to hang out with these people, you know, and do something meaningful, you know. It's so much a layered film. Because one person that brought up is almost like Jaws, actually. Like a Western version of Jaws, because it's this trying to, you know, trying this natural predator comes in, and you're trying to coming into a territory that's actually this is a natural thing, and you constantly trying to control this natural predator, this being that is in its own space, and trying to conform it to your thing, and therefore you like you just hunt it down because it's going against everything that, you know, you're trying to do. You know, it's like encroaching in on nature. If we can't, you know, human beings, if we can't, you know, eat it, you know, fuck it, or you know do something with it, we'll tear it down and kill it, you know.
Yeah. And that's, like, the I think the isolation is interesting too, because it's isolation and yet, right? Like, it's isolation with the connection to Hollywood, at least insofar as they can get to Hollywood to do the horse stuff. It's isolation and yet the sound from Jupiter's Claim carries quite clearly. Like, you can't necessarily make out all the words, but you can hear it. And, like, thinking about the way that sound pollution and light pollution, like, we basically have no, we have hardly anywhere left where there's not light pollution at night, where there's not sound pollution. And so, like, there's isolation, but you're never fully alone. And sometimes that's a helpful thing, like when Angel, right, like when all three of them are able to, like, come together. And sometimes you're like, no, stop. I just don't want to hear any noise. I don't want to hear right. Jupiter's Claim on Friday night. Like,
Yeah. It's that was one of, because, like I said, because you can't, because you're, like, you're isolating. I mean, the same thing with the hearing people scream inside of Jean Jacket. It's like, in a city environment, would you have even noticed Jean Jacket, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, or even have heard, noticed the noise of people screaming. Probably just like, oh, that's just the Cubs losing again, or that's so-and-so, or, you know, or that's just chemtrails, or he would just, you know, whatever. You know, whatever it is, and go about, that isolate, you know, but sometimes there is that isolation is important, you know. Which goes back to Otis Sr. sitting on the horse, you know, just one with nature.
Still has to be in.
Yeah, by human beings in the form of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
Which is weird, which is one thing I also picked up on the movie too, is like that Jean Jacket had been around for a long time.
Yeah.
Because like the coin was old, you know, so he had been around for a long time. Like, okay.
I did not catch the age of the coin, but yeah, was wondering how long Jean Jacket had been around, because how do people figure that out?
Yeah.
How long did it take to realize that one cloud wasn't ever moving, and then to realize what it was, and then to start trying to manipulate it? Also,
all for capitalism.
Yeah.
Right.
we've already kind of melded into our theological discussion stuff too.
Yep.
So just can keep going with that. But
keep it going. Yep.
This was so often. So we've been doing the Ghostbuster series this season, and they use Revelation, which they add an S to the end of. And I just thought it was so interesting, because so often in scripture and stuff, that's what people go to for the scary scripture to quote. And in this, it was Nahum, which is one of the prophets, Nahum 3:6, which is,
prophet, even not Isaiah Daniel or something.
This is to get this as the thing that you're using, you have to actually know something about the Bible, unless you just did a Google search for the word spectacle. But, Nahum.
Google search.
Right. Nahum 3:6 is, I will throw filth at you and treat you with contempt and make you a spectacle. And that just fits so well with the movie.
And just context for that is Nahum was writing against the Assyrian Empire and its capital city of Nineveh. So it's Nineveh in this case is what will become the spectacle to show God's wrath, as Nineveh is and Assyria are trying to destroy God's people. And so you said, it's just a very fitting verse, and such a relief compared to the verses we normally get on this podcast.
That are just it kind of says this scary thing. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yep.
He says it in the beginning. I mean, if you think about it, it is actually Jupiter's Claim becomes that spectacle that they talk about. So it's the self-fulfilling prophecy of the scripture reading. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of similarly with that is just the way that Jupe kind of takes this personal tragic event in his life and commodifies it, which is a way to deal with trauma, but not necessarily a healthy way yeah. to deal with trauma. So I just, yeah, and how that ties into the capitalism stuff too. But like, legit, as a kid, that was like, must have been traumatized, right. major traumatized.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
And yet he just always glosses over the trauma whenever he talks about it and goes immediately to like, let me show you this gallery of like artifacts I have from this show and that I have on display and stuff like that.
So. Right. Yeah, and it's because it's almost a fetish to him, in a sense, as much as it is to everyone else, because it's you know, he has everything else, he has his memorabilia, but then he has this special room that he sends people to. It's like, yes, I have this special room. Now, here's all my other stuff, but here's my special room.
Right.
You know, and. In my special room, you know, because you can also see him thinking that he has this, because he survived one incident, you know, he has this special connection to, you know, I'm the animal whisperer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can survive them all. I'm the animal whisperer. You know, it's almost like a god complex. It's like, you know, I can control the animals and, you know, and now I control this, you know, and so.
You're learning the wrong lesson from that example.
Right, yeah, yes. Yeah, right, yeah. And it's funny because it switches, because he goes from controlling to seeing as it's not, because Jean Jacket actually, through humanity, was eating horse, I mean, because he was eating the horses, but because of the one plastic horse, the one steel horse, his diet changed. So this shift, the change in animals' idea changes his feeding habits. So now the animal has gone from eating horses to eating people, which causes this whole how humanity changes and disrupts, you know, things.
You know. And that, especially in the natural world, yeah.
Yeah.
And that it's like the thing that saved him saved Jupe was a small moment of connection.
Yeah.
And a bond that he had created with the chimp of the, like, fist bump thing. And it's so interesting because I, like, now when I think back to that opening scene and to the whole, like, TV chimp thing, I had always been looking at it from the perspective of Jupe, because I think that's it, like, we're set up to look at it from that perspective. Mm-hmm. But now it's like, no, it's about like to look at it from the chimp's perspective, or at least from like a kind of bird's eye view of like, no, there is this like attempt to control the chimp and make the chimp act and be in a certain way without the connection, without care and concern for who the chimp actually is and the like agency of a living being. And the one place where safety was established, where someone was protected, was the one person who developed an actual relationship with the chimp. And then to take that into Jean Jacket, right? The one space where anybody was safe, or anybody had any semblance of safety in the midst of spectacle and consumption of horses and then humans, was because Daniel's character, OJ, recognized who Jean Jacket was and formed a bond. And it's like not a usual bond, right? But like a bond of understanding and of interacting in a way that showed respect and not just like manipulation or antagonism or like trying to one-up each other or whatever.
Because Jean Jacket is kind of scary. I would respect her too.
Yeah. For real.
But also like amazing and magnificent and angelic and...
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, like, that's the thing. Like, you want to look at it. And by looking at it,
yeah,
it kills you.
You die. Yeah.
It makes me think of like the Hebrew Bible, especially like notion of the divine being so awesome and magnificent that it is terrifying at the same time as it is beautiful. Or like Moses looking at God's ass or something like that. So it's like kind of similar vibes with Jean Jacket, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with the actual image of angels, the seraphim and Ephraim, and it, because they don't look like, you know, dudes in funky robes with wings. It's like there are these beautiful and sometimes very scary things with multiple eyes and, you know, and all stuff like that. So it's kind of like, oh, now I can see why you kind of got, you know.
The
Jean Jacket. I'm totally gonna make a meme now of a pic of Jean Jacket and say, "Be not afraid."
Oh yeah, I love it. It does like so. We for this year for our Ascension episode for Nerds at Church, we did it on UFOs and UAPs, unidentified astral projections. It does raise this question of, for Jean Jacket in particular, aside from the fact that, like, at the end, Jean Jacket presumably dies in the giant explosion, there is, like, this moment of question of, like, what if Jean Jacket really is God? Like, this undetected presence that is just there and hanging out, and, like, as long as it goes undetected, everything is fine. It's beautiful and awesome and awe-inspiring for literally everyone. And awe-inspiring in the way that, like, borders on fear, right? When we talk about fear and revere. Yeah. And God being good but not tame kind of thing, which is a C.S. Lewis Chronicles of Narnia thing. It's, like, there's just so many different, like, intersections I hadn't never thought about Jean Jacket as a divine character.
Well, as I said, the background, like, it was, that probably was in their mind all along, in the sense that, like, they specifically designed it influenced by a Neon Genesis Evangelion's depiction of angels in that thing. And the slogan of the organization that is combating the angels in Neon Genesis Evangelion is, "God is in his heaven, all's right with the world." So, like, it feels very much like this intentional drawing upon biblical imagery. And that's also what the Nahum quote is about, too, I think. Yeah. And I think UAP is not astral projection, as it is aerial phenomena.
That's what it was.
Unidentified aerial phenomena.
Yeah, I was like, sounds wrong as I was saying it. And I was like, I don't, still getting
so over. So basically an SEP, somebody else's problem.
I like it.
I like that one a lot.
So that's what that is. I can't claim credit for that. I think that's a Douglas Adams.
So,
I mean, it's if you, and also too, when we look at, you know, going with the that aspect, you also have to look at it as Jean Jacket being one angelic. It's like people have this image of starting out with, oh yes, angels are wonderful and beautiful. It's like, no, they're killing machines, and hence, and they're predators. So this, I mean, if you want to take it that way too, you can look at it as, everyone sees this image of Jean Jacket, like, oh yes, it's a beautiful thing, it's wonderful. It's like, no.
Until you look at it, and then.
Until you look at it, right, yeah.
Like, in Luke, when we always think of, by we, I mean popular culture, but like in the birth narrative of Luke, the host of angels as this beautiful thing in the sky, but this host is literally a military term. It's an entire army of angels ready to destroy something.
All in the angel armies have appeared.
So that's the thing. But speaking of like host and angel armies, I mean, that's the thing. It's like with that image, you know, even the Haywood Ranch is like this almost angelic place because it is so isolated, you know, but then suddenly it becomes more and more like a police state and like an army with all the surveillance. So, you know, so there's this shift in how it becomes this, once again, because of humans. And it's, you know, and how it alters, and even with OJ and Emerald, they wind up becoming almost like dupe, in the sense that in order to save what they need to save, or to make money, they're literally moving out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. They're moving out of their own natural state, and going into something else, you know. And so,
yeah, and starting to create a spectacle themselves.
Yeah, themselves. Yeah,
or set it up for a spectacle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anything else for our deep dive? Are we ready to rate? I think we're ready to rate the movie. Awesome. So this is our Ghostbuster season, so we're rating it out of 10 proton packs. There is one thing that, before we get to rating it, mm-hmm. is I'm listening back to our episode on Candyman, and I remember saying when next week we'll be covering Nope, which is not a ghost movie, and I start talking about like how it's not a ghost movie, and Emily's like, no, I think it might be. So before I do that, I want to hear why you think this might be a ghost movie, Emily, and then we'll rate it.
Okay. First off, I think part of what we've been talking about with angels connects to that, because I think a lot of people experience angels and ghosts in kind of similar realms.
Okay, makes sense.
But I think there is a space that I think that most of the characters are haunted in this. Mm. And they don't always recognize it, right? Like, I don't know that Jupe actually realizes how haunted he is by what happened to him as a kid, because he's made it into spectacle. He's commodified it. And so I think there's a way in which that, like, probably makes him feel like he can't be haunted by it. It can't be bad, because it's clearly a good thing, because now he has money from it. But even like OJ is so clearly haunted by his dad's death and all that has been happening with Haywood Farms and like with their business and all of that stuff. And Kiki is haunted in her own way. I think like there's a reason that she doesn't show up as much, that she's not as involved. Mm-hmm. And part of it is like a sibling dynamic that, like, I think most of us who are siblings can be like, okay, yeah, I see that. I know how that works. So I don't think it's a ghost movie in the sense of there is a ghost that shows up, or ghosts, but in the sense of like, it is a movie about haunting. And I think the spectacle can come in, like when we think of Casper, right? Casper is a movie, it is a ghost movie all about and there's spectacle everywhere. But yeah, so that's kind of my like argument in favor of this being a ghost movie.
I like it. We'll see what our listeners think, but yeah. I'm vibing with what you're saying. So then I guess out of 10 proton packs, while we're on the theme of ghosts, what would you rate this movie? And do you have a favorite kill from this movie? We usually start with our guest if you want to go first, but if you need time to think, that's okay. I can.
No. So what is a Slimer rate? If I gave it a Slimer.
That works too. I like it. You can rate it in Slimers. Okay.
All right. So I'm going to culminate all this. Slimer is really good for me. So I'll give it a Slimer.
I like it.
And the favorite kill, I don't know so much as have one. Because, you know, there was no really someone I was like going, oh yes, get them, you know, mm-hmm. except for Jupe's sons. I'm like, yes, please. I'm glad you put up in there. So other than everyone else who was there, Jupe's sons, because they were little assholes.
There you go. I like it. Yeah. So. I can go next then, I guess. I'll rate it a 9 out of 10 proton packs. It's a really great movie. Really love it. One of the best horror movies of 2022 easily. And my favorite death, I think, is the weird motorcyclist who gets thrown off his motorcycle and then gets eaten by Jean Jacket.
That, yeah, I do love that one. I am going to rate it a 9.5, which I think makes it my favorite of this, my top rated of this season. But I just loved this movie. I like so many of the movies that we cover, particularly because like we're covering a whole gap of like time periods and that sort of thing. I'm like, well, this is problematic. Well, here's the misogyny here. Well, here's this and here's that. And this film just did so well at like poking at and digging into stuff that I was like there wasn't all of that that I had to like wade through to get to the movie. I love OJ. Kiki's great, and I'm glad that there are queer characters that are just like naturally occurring in movies. But I love OJ. I love like so much about who he is as a character and how consistent and faithful he is in to his family, to his understanding of what his purpose is. And I think I was gonna say my favorite kill is probably the TMZ guy on the motorcycle as well, because it's just like, awesome. You're being an asshole. This woman has said specifically, it is not safe for you here. You're not allowed on private property. Get the fuck away. And you're like, psh, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to go anyway. And then you get like thrown from your electric bike and killed. And you know what? Yeah. I also think that Jupe was like a totally legit kill at that point.
Yeah.
Where he was being so antagonistic and provoking of the spectacle, for the spectacle of it.
And you know he wasn't going to sell, he was going to get, the whole scene about giving the horses back, it's just like.
No, yep. He's using them as bait.
Yeah, exactly, you could tell. It was just like, yeah, so let's talk about giving the horse, you know, buying the horses back. And he's like, he's like, no. Oh. He's like, okay, you're up to something.
Yeah. And I don't think I had any jump scares in this. If I did, it was the praying mantis. If I had any jump scares, that would have been the one.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Because that was like.
I like it. I like it. Well, thank you again so much, Rob, for joining us for this episode. It was such a pleasure to have you on. Mm-hmm. Where can our listeners find you? Do you have any upcoming projects, social media handles, anything like that you want to shout out?
Sure. You can catch me on Instagram. My man plays. It's Black Remus, BLA, like color black, Remus, REMUS 1 on Instagram. So yeah. Yeah, no projects coming up just yet. Just working on some paintings, but that will be forthcoming on the Instagram page.
Nice.
Very cool. That's awesome.
Yeah, and if you haven't ever checked out, you definitely should check it out because amazing artistry. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, again, thank you so much. Our next, we're winding down season 5. So our next episode is our retrospective. So Emily and I will basically go over all of the movies we covered this season so far, talk about our favorite moments, rank them. It's a really fun time if you haven't made it to our retrospective episode yet. So join us for that. And then we'll take a few months break before we come back for Star Wars and Alien. So some exciting season 6 stuff. Yep. And then
no Star Trek?
Not yet, but soon. I want to. There's so much Star Wars out there. It's like we can't. We had enough of a difficulty just fitting the Star Wars in.
Yeah. We'll get there eventually. Yeah. I will eventually watch Star Trek, I'm sure.
Yeah, Emily hasn't really seen Star Trek.
I've seen a couple, like, random episodes. I don't have anything against it. I think it's great. It never lined up for my, like, when I was watching stuff like that and when it was available. All of the coolest people in my life love Star Trek. Don't worry. I'll get there.
Well, I guess that's it for our show then. Our theme music was by Matt May. We release every Thursday, at least until the end of the season. Then we'll come back in September. Please comment, rate, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Support us on Patreon and get access to exclusive movie commentary episodes, BooTube episodes, and more bonus content by going to patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. It begins at only $5 to sign up, so much cheaper than a ticket to Jupiter's weird claim theme park, Jupiter's Claim.
Yep.
Follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Horror Nerds at Church, and Twitter at HNACPOD for all the latest updates about upcoming films, news, and other announcements. Until next time, if you are going to try to catch an extra world entity on film, maybe your life might be a little bit more important than trying to get that money shot. Just saying. Maybe take that into consideration. But...